We have a playmate.
Can you hear me?
More than that, we want your chocolate.
It's actually crackers. I'm doing dinner.
Oh.
Are you somewhere where you're enjoying the nice weather, it looks like?
God, I'm outside. It's really good.
Yeah, it's like warm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We should
I don't
have.
Know, Jeff, I could probably rustle up some chocolate somewhere.
We should have come over to my place for a little fire.
Oh, man.
I might go to the Grateful Dead acoustic thingy down the house.
When is that?
Because I'd never leave the house anymore.
Is that tonight?
At 9. I think it's every Tuesday now. They're going to, it looks like, scheduled for every Tuesday. And there's like $3 pints, and I think it's free. And starts at 9.
I may go, too. It sounds like fun.
Nice house.
Okay. What would you like to talk about so that we can all pretend that we're saturated with enlightenment?
Kind of got a hit over the weekend that it might be time to just give myself time to sit in this by myself.
Yes, that's key.
Like there's a, I don't know, there's kind of like a growing desire. It's like, stop talking about it. Just like, kind of live it. Catherine was talking about that on Sunday.
Yes.
I actually think I'm getting a little bit tired of talking about it.
Imagine how I feel.
We know
I show up just to make sure he has to talk about something.
No, actually, I never tire of it.
I'll be right back. I've got to get something. But I'll leave it going.
Then make sure there's enough for three.
No, I only have soup for one. I got crackers.
Oh, man. So what is that whole thing? The go-it-alone thing?
I don't know. It's interesting because I understand what she's saying on some level. But, like, for me, right, my flood of experience with that is so vast that I can't even, I mean, where do you want to begin, right? It's like, I mean, in the beginning, I felt just weird because I was like, you know, how often do I follow these people around? And, it, you know, it's, like, awkward. Are they, like, friends? What are they? How, you know, how, am I just being needy? Have I formed into addiction?
I like the addiction part.
Yeah. I mean, whatever, you know. I like it. It makes me feel good. So I'm going to keep hitting the button.
Yes. It's simple. Give me a button and some cocaine. And I'll hit it. Well, I...
But, there's also seems to be a bizarre division that people, you know, I mean, for me, this has become a way of life. I didn't have to stop talking about it for it to become a way of life. It just followed me from inquiry into whatever.
Well, we're about to drill Nan on her on her folly.
Yeah. I think like any good addiction, it eventually fades. Like, it's got to open a door to something else or it sort of implodes on itself. And my thought was, it's time to start. What's the word you use when you're like behind a truck and you're trying to get their kind of the airstream behind them to help you?
Draft.
It's time to stop drafting you and like take a look myself.
Well, I think that's a real good idea for maybe 5 or 10 minutes.
I don't get very far.
No, I mean, I know how silly that is. Yes, it's absolutely essential that when, let's just call it a mood or inspiration arises that says, it's my responsibility to feel this on my own terms, then, you know, that's where you go, right? Period. There's no negotiating or justifying it.
But But it's not like you have a, I mean, I've made that decision in my head plenty of times. And guess what?
Well, for you, Francine, the universe
here I am.
To give you lots of time.
Huh?
You know, the universe sort of conspired. You had a like a life land in your lap that just says, okay, this is all you get.
I don't know, but I've had the same, you know, I've made the same decision that I should not ride Jeff's energy to have my own whatever and blah, blah, blah. And I don't know. I still show up. So,
I mean, this,
whatever that means is.
This kind of conversation would make sense if I had energy.
It's just more make-believe derailment. You're like back to your behavior and you're worried about it. And,
but I don't have any energy. I don't have possess.
Yeah,
any,
you're trying to make sense of it.
Any Shakti to bestow to or on anyone.
No, Jeff, it sure is fun hanging out with you. I mean, that's as best I can come up with. It's just fun.
Well, so if it's just fun, then what part of your... and again, I mean, it's very curious to talk about this because it's fun to drill into, and I do so just for the thrill of the chase, not for the, what would you call it, encouraging someone to hang out with the likes of me. Because I'm just a, you know, I'm a swollen guy with nothing to show. So let's say you're having fun, right? Maybe you interpret that fun as having to do something with me being present, right? Or the silly notion that there might be something emanating from my, you know, pristine and sublime energy that is beneficial to you. And that for sure has to be a fucking lie.
I used to think that. It's not true.
But I used to think that too.
I don't.
Just hearing you say it is funny.
So that illusion's off the table, right?
Totally.
Okay, good.
Totally.
And then,
no question.
So then where does the notion of drafting come in? If, let's say, you participate as a truly autonomous, you know, clownster, and it has nothing to do with something that I impose upon anybody deliberately, spiritually, surreptitiously, or otherwise.
All right, I have no fucking idea why I seem to show up 4 times a week and I can't stop.
Well, I mean, I'm with you. You know, like a recent interview that, you know, some guy had, you know, on one of those Carl Renz things was like, why do you come here then if there is nothing, you know? And he said without skipping a beat, I don't know why I come here. I don't know why we're doing this. You know, I like to have fun, if you could say. But beyond that, please, I don't have an explanation.
I used to think I was actually doing something, getting somewhere. Oh, here's Jeff. Okay, he's going to give me something. I don't believe it anymore.
Well, that was always true. So, you know, I'm glad that wore out.
Oh, it's like the same thing as asking, you know, why do you take a shit? I don't know. It seems to be a necessity.
Yeah.
Jeff gave me that.
I just know you like to talk about poop, Stan, and so I wanted to make sure, you know.
I appreciate it. I feel at home now.
Well, we went scatological in the first 5 minutes, so we're on a roll.
What kind of toilet roll?
Yeah, usually it takes about an hour and 15 minutes before we go to the elimination side of the biologic. But well, this must be a full moon.
I'm on a seriously portable laptop. I can take you guys anywhere, including the bathroom.
Nice. So the question I have, and you know, you can pass, of course, is where does the notion of drafting come from? And where does the notion of, you know, being, let's say, alone or solo come from? If participating or not participating, of course, has nothing to do with me and only to do with you.
I can tell you where it comes from in terms of just memory.
Okay.
That in the past, I think I've had certain experiences with certain people, and this may get me something similar, and the reality is it's all kind of gone flat. I mean, there's no rhyme or reason to it. The last time I had something that was like, oh shit, this is what Peter Brown's talking about. I was in the middle of dinner with Dave. I was being a total shit to him. And it was right there in front of me. I had nothing to do with anything, really. It was
just weird. Right. That's right. Well, again, you know, the Night Sky Sangha exists in such a way that everyone is free to come and go and participate, you know, or not participate as they please. It's just fun to drill into impulses that arise, either ones that say, oh, I must show up at every single meeting and my life would be a ruse and a ruination if I didn't. And also a sentiment that looks like, well, you're drafting me or the group or something, and going solo satisfies, you know, some kind of when I say fantasy, I don't mean it in a pejorative manner, right? It suits some kind of idea. And they're great. Participating and not participating is great. I don't have the luxury, but I certainly encourage others to feel and exercise the luxury.
Going solo is as much of a lie as I'm going to get something from this, because I'd have to be believing in something for more.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's kind of the question that's fun to look at, which may or may not have anything to do with personalities or having a good time or not having a good time or what they call transmission, you know, silly things like that. This is just as it is. So with people howling is one thing, by yourself howling is another, or by yourself, you know, not drafting and looking at things. So like, it's all good no matter how it goes down, but it's fun to look at the idea, the subtle idea that characterizes participation as a form of drafting, let's say, and not participating as a new chapter in what exactly? that's with all due respect to participating and not participating.
The missing piece in this, Jeff, is that we're not paying any money.
Oh, is that so? As a missing piece, is that disadvantageous or advantageous?
No, it's disadvantageous because it forces the illusion that there's something to get.
Oh, you mean when you charge money?
When you charge money, people are enrolled in the idea that, holy Christ, this is the place to go to get what we're missing.
I think that's very true. And, I mean, even some institutions make sure to charge a lot of money.
Yes.
You know, for those that can afford it and for those that kind of justify that it is something to do, there is something to get, and so participating in it is the right way to be.
That's exactly right. I charge a lot of money for my work, and everybody believes it's great.
Sweet.
Yeah.
So then I guess I'm operating at a disadvantage by not charging money.
No, that you just undiscovered.
Right. Yeah, undiscovered.
Undiscovered.
Are you drafting?
You'd immediately be discovered if you start charging an outrageous amount of money.
Yeah.
Frank, can you turn your volume down a little by any chance? It's like really loud.
Yeah, I can do that. Is that better?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Well, do we have drafting, solo, and the merits of charging money or no money at all?
By drafting, do you mean that you're drafting people into Night Sky Sangha?
No, not yeah. Thanks. No, Nan brought up the notion of drafting, as in riding a bicycle behind a silver stream so that there's no wind resistance.
Oh, that's much different.
Yeah. So think of the illusion of transmission, right?
Uh-huh.
And so typically in the world of paid and unpaid non-duality, right? An aspirant feels a certain harmonic or resonance or affection, call it what you will, with a so-called realizer, and therefore being in the somnambulistic company of that transmission, one is, you know, drafting. Now, the funny thing is if we look at it yogically, perennially, since this imaginary beginning, that's always the way it goes down. Or let's say commonly the way it goes down, right? If you have a realizer in your midst, then please don't look at me because I'm not one. But if you have a realizer in your midst, and realizing is something that is, you know, underneath your wing, right? It's in your soul. Then you're going to be compelled to be in the company of the realizer to, by osmosis, right, feel what it feels like to be undifferentiated. That is the perennial guru yoga, regardless of gender or perhaps even species. And that is, for shit sure, drafting.
I still contend that there is that, I don't know. I do contend, Jeff, that you have absolutely something to offer, whether it's just bringing us together, whether it's just, you know, reminders. I don't know what the hell it is, but I do contend you have something to offer. I probably wouldn't be here with you.
Well, I mean, I feel that way, too. I'm not saying I have something to offer, but I feel that participating in a conversation that turns awareness onto itself rather than apologetically, anecdotally, is an open doorway, if I can steal Peter's moniker, into profound levels of realization and sensitivity that are otherwise not available when one dwells in the frivolity of make-believe. So it's a geometry. In that case, it's a clear strategy that consciousness kind of obeys.
It just so happens there's only a tiny group in our immediate area that...
Yes, and it just so happens that the number of people that are typically attracted to a dynamic investigation of the present nature of consciousness and the textures of consciousness typically are very few. That's just that. When I, you know, felt compelled to open the floodgates to have this kind of conversation, you know, I can credit or blame my privileged relationship with Peter Brown for, you know, forcing it. Because when I would return from, you know, California after these lovely and immersive, you know, call them vacation retreats, you know, life in California, I was like, well, if I don't have this conversation on Wednesday, I'm going to fucking kill myself. I mean, really, you know, I would drive into a mall parking lot or someplace and I would just like weep, you know, really, I would just sit in the van and I would just weep because something inside of me was tearing apart or tearing open. Fuck if I know. So after a while, I was like, and I had the, you know, the so-called Pebble Hill Sangha, right? A meditation group as a kind of a segue or a jumping off point to see if it might transition into something more profound. And fucking A, it did. It transitioned into something more profound. And the people that used to participate in Pebble Hill Sangha no longer do. And now, you know, they hang out with our dear beloved Dave on a Tuesday night or Thursday night to go back to the non-confrontational practice of meditation. So it looks like we splintered successfully. The Night Sky Sangha does this shit, and the folks that don't want to be challenged, you know, thankfully continue to get together and meditate. It was a successful mitosis.
Bruce.
Hi, everybody.
Bruce, you look like, I don't know, you look like that that cover from Meet the Beatles.
That's what I was thinking, except without the hair.
Yeah.
Oh, I got hair.
Oh, yeah, oh, okay.
I got all kinds of hair.
Well, it's Meet the Beatles 2014 with Bruce Jacques. Playing.
And I got my new iPhone 6. Woo!
Oh, bend it for us. Bend it.
I can do it. I can do it with my mind.
It's amazing.
That's great.
Where's your hat? It's Hat Tuesday.
Yeah, it's Hat Tuesday. You didn't get the memo?
There we go.
It's working now.
You belong. You're happening.
So I think the, you know, the reinforcement is, holy shit, we don't have to sit on a cushion, though that's lovely. We don't have to do the plow pose. I can't do it anymore anyway. We can actually, let's just say conversationally, socially, without manipulating anyone, right? Without imposing a liturgy, without demanding any conformity from anybody, we can actually participate in the intelligence of consciousness itself, of awareness itself, feel what it feels like to turn the attention on itself and actually remain in a conversation as we do that. That's, call it inquiry into awakening. That we have the maturity, the intelligence, the ease, the trust, the affection, and call it the yogic chops. To practice presence out loud is fucking thrilling, if you ask me.
Hear, hear.
Thank you.
It's off the charts. Found nowhere else.
Yeah.
At least that I know of on the East Coast.
Well, it's, you know, I mean, whatever this is or isn't is, of course, all over the place in anything that you participate in. The question is, you know, how intimate, how conscious, how transcendent can we go? Why not aim, right, for a curious, profound dissociation from the human dream and feel what this is?
Well put.
Yeah, and sensation, as in, let's just call it immersive attention, relaxation, you know, maybe even a pinch of some transcendence, deep, call it psychic silence, can actually be present in our three-dimensional or two-dimensional meetings, and it has a certain vocabulary. So we chill out, listen to this, feel this, relax. Wonder makes itself known. Wonder is worth relaxing into without a destination, without a justification or an explanation of any kind. And wonder can be just as silent as it can be articulate.
I like the lack of pious horseshit.
Yeah, me too.
There's like just gobs of pious horseshit that goes along with any spiritual endeavor. And this is utterly devoid of that, and it makes sense.
Yeah, it feels a certain way. I feel the same way.
This is like for real people.
Yeah, well, look at us. I mean, I'm surprised any of us are employed.
Wait a minute, I still am. It's my problem.
Don't let my employer know I'm here, please.
Really? I know. Well, you know, face it, you are the secret Sufi you've been looking for. You know, all this time we were running around, you know, looking for a secret Sufi to like hang out with, and I was like, well, holy fuck, it turned out to be me.
I was spinning too fast to catch it.
Yeah, that's right. I was working too hard to catch it that I didn't notice that it was me.
Much like a thermometer, this results in a bullshit thermometer.
Yeah, I can. Absolutely. Yeah. When you, you know, when any of us simply mature in a relaxed manner, which is the only way, into the thrill, the confidence, the weirdness of being itself, then the manner in which we believe in, what we call it, human proliferation, right? Abstract proliferation, the drama field of the mind. As we become disentangled from the drama field of the mind and relax into the imminent, eminent, natural grace of being, then anything that's trying too hard, like including ourselves, is easy to see as bullshit.
Yes, I mean, it shows up in neon lights.
Yeah, doesn't it? Isn't it great?
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it used to be, you know, the bullshitometer was really hard to see. It looked like a pinpoint light in the distance, but now it's fucking neon.
It is.
Yeah. And to see the myth of yourself in neon is clearly, you know, a profound indication that your, call it capacity for authenticity, is improved. I see a hand raised.
That's an interesting point. The myth, what'd you call it? The myth of who?
Well, why don't we go with Stan?
That's a good one.
Yeah.
You know, I had the recent experience of seeing something about Stan that I didn't realize was imagination before.
Whoa.
And that was really, really weird and peculiar.
Should I get a broom or a mop?
I think it went poof. I think it's air pollution.
I see. Okay, right. But, so it's already gone.
But the weird thing into that, I actually had a little, you know, when Peter talks about, you know, he talks about specificity, that vagueness is the problem, and that specificity, especially in regards to the myth. I mean, it can't be specific about experience because it's just everywhere and all over the place and wild and cacophonous, but that the myth or the stories are really, they survive because of vagueness. And so there's a specificity.
Wow.
That came to the fore that, and by, I mean, I got to help with it. And so, by looking specifically at something, I went, holy shit. And I don't think I could have caught that without, I mean, if it's not conscious, that, or the unconscious, is because it's unconscious.
Well, if I may, even listening to you talk about it is evaporating into total gibberish, isn't it?
It's specificity and precision is really essential in breaking the hypnosis of trying and I and the project of I. And I'm just, it's,
I don't think so, but it certainly can feel that way. I mean, when you recognize, as you mentioned, a poof of something that, let's say, you still believed in and you hadn't noticed that you were believing in something that was kind of useless and ambiguous and uncertain. And that immediacy of revelation without even having to have any content, right, just evaporated whatever remnant belief it may have been. And I would say it's not even possible to articulate what the remnant belief even was.
I would probably agree with that.
Yeah, so it's fun to watch the, call it the majesty, the vacuum cleaner. What are those really expensive vacuum cleaners that you can get?
Hoover?
Kirby?
Hoover.
Yeah. No, Hoover's. Anyway, get the best vacuum. How about, I got it. How about a Home Depot wet, dry shop vac? You know, turn that on our superstition belief systems and specificity and ambiguity and watch it get, right? Sucked out of existence. And that's what we have here. We have, oh, fuck, what's this that's being constantly sucked out of existence?
Well, that constantly sucks.
Constantly sucks in the best way possible. I realize and appreciate the thrill of, let's say, focusing the teaching of Radiant Presence on what's the word? It's not vagueness. It's the impossibility of feeling or conveying this with any certainty whatsoever. So I guess it's divine uncertainty. That our present experience is punctuated primarily by divine uncertainty. And to the extent that we can relax into divine uncertainty without resistance, without justification, then our present experience becomes marvelously slippery.
If I made my experience of this thing with that when the belief was seen as a belief, which I hadn't seen before, then and went poof, then what you said exactly came in. That's what filled the void. That was just what you just said.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, that's right, and that makes sense, right? I mean, that makes sense to speak boldly, perhaps universally. That makes sense for any and all of us that are participating in a journey of self-investigation, self-realization at really subtle levels of play. Because our consciousness, whatever you want to call it, has room to feel itself in unique textures because it's not being overwhelmed by anecdotal hysteria. And that's doing itself, right? It's not like when you had that kind of a quality, a subtle, marvelous quality of recognition and poof, could there have possibly been any effort or even psychological time?
Not afterwards, that's for damn sure.
Okay. Well, afterwards revealed the vacuity of this presence. If there was a beforehand, we could say, maybe with some glee, that it was imagined. If there is a beforehand as before now, it has to be imagined. Right? The entirety of it. If there was a before now, any reach, any entertainment of before now, has to be imaginary.
Isn't that the predominant world that is lived in?
Yes, I would argue. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I haven't interviewed everyone, and there's only, you know, six of us on the call, so it's hard to know. But it's a safe bet.
It's pretty, I think it's...
6 out of 6.
A reasonable assertion, since there are only 6 of us. Well, the rest of them are in that imagined world.
Yes, this is you could say, part of the uncanny nature of what we are kicking around as inquiry or revelation or realization, is that any entertainment in consciousness of anything that occurred prior to this moment has to be imaginary. And any entertainment of something that we refer to as future, which is down the road from now, is likewise absolutely imaginary. Now, that alone, without really pushing too many buttons, is that would send just about anybody to the hospital seeking Thorazine. Right? I don't think I'm kidding around. Everyone on this call has had the Thorazine, and so we are habituated sufficiently to deal with of the curious nature of secular revelation without flipping out. That's how you build if you're interested in building a Nahual party, right, a coven of realizers, they have all had sufficient amount of Thorazine and good reason to take it in order for us to have this conversation. Because the average fucking guru from the yoga studio would flip the fuck out, rage on, or just not be here. I don't know. Maybe there's too much hubris and presumption in all that, but it was worth a try.
It was good.
Fuck them if they can't take a joke. Now, the interesting thing is, together, as we can appreciate the evaporative nature of what we call past and the similar frivolity or imaginary nature of what we might refer to as future, that leaves us where exactly? Well, here, were there such a place, and now, were there such a time that it was possible for us to occupy? So now our conversation becomes even a little stranger. Because once we take past off the table, and then we take future off the table, well, then awareness has to kind of settle into right about now. And now is really fucked up. Because now doesn't last. You cannot actually occupy now. Now, as we feel this, the curious investigation that even now can't be occupied, where are the glorious citadels, centuries, that we refer to as time and space? Where is the antagonist and protagonist of our favorite novel, namely myself? So the texture of being, of subjective nature, of sensation, of whatever we call present experience, can be, let's say, appreciated as void of past, void of future, void of present, void of space, void of time, and void of self. We ain't got nothing left. Once those, call it principal centuries of delusion, are taken off the table, not through heavy-handed, right, aggressive, confidence-seeking or imposition of any kind, just through your own cheerful willingness to look, to feel, to participate in the conversation. What the fuck is this if past, future, present, time, space, and self are gone? Oh, that was a short meeting.
Cut to the chase too quickly.
Yeah, really. We should have talked about Halloween planning or something for a while.
Right.
We do a Halloween party and I'll go as nobody.
Oh, sweet. Good. Present experiencing, whatever it is or isn't, obviously does not simply blink out of existence like turning the power off to your favorite HD TV.
Experience continues.
Whatever this is or isn't has, can we say, a persistent nature. So one of the most, let's call them strange paradoxes, is that this is void of anything you could accuse it of, but it's still persistent. It has no actual continuity, actual causality, actual karma, actual dharma. It is indeed completely void of reference and or a disparate subjective nature that would even be interested in reference. And yet, whatever it is or isn't, persists.
Well, given that we're trapped by language,
are we?
That what we can do is say what it isn't, and it's impossible to say what it is.
Yes. It, by virtue of the nature of language as a one-sided, somewhat bullying, referential matrix, language is insufficient to refer to a constantly evaporating holodynamic radiance which just tickles itself with itself.
I think that's a great trick that's been pulled on us.
Don't you think? Absolutely.
Yeah. It's so fucking clever. I wish I could have thought of it.
Really? I mean, talk about making a living. If I could have thought of this.
You did think of it.
Yeah, right. Good point. Yeah, you did. That's why this is happening. It's all your fault.
This was your idea.
I'm trying to figure out how to make money on it, though.
Well, you should have put it in the plan.
Really?
Good job, Jeff. Send me donations. Thank you.
Thank you so much for my life. I will send money.
Yeah, you should have put it in the plan before you put the clause that you're going to forget it all.
Yeah, right.
The end.
Yeah, that's right. It's self-forgetting, isn't it? That's what's so funny. This is, let's just call it for a moment, reality. It's not, it's not hidden. It's not actually confounding itself, is it? And yet, we can say within the apparent dual nature of our subjective psychology that the miracle of being is hiding out. Someone said, so God, so like, where are you going to hide out? God said, oh, that's easy, inside of you. I'm going to hide out inside of you as you. Good luck finding me. It seemed to work.
Well, there's a distinction to be made here.
It's
the kind of gathering that you do has a certain cogency to point to that. It's not so easy to do it without company.
Oh. Well, yeah. I mean, unless you're talking to yourself.
Yeah.
I do that.
That goes far.
Yeah, really.
I can imagine any bullshit I want.
And you do. And we all
do. I do.
And you do.
Yeah. So there's a different texture in from that presence to this presence.
Yes, I would. I agree. There is a different texture from dwelling in imagination, right? The the privacy of our own imaginary world, and exercising a certain quality of alert attentivity, whatever mm-hmm. that may suggest, you know, being present, feeling what you're feeling, right? Looking at the energetics of experience, not simply undermining the energetics of experience by filling it with content.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that is a different space to be in.
Yes, that's why I kind of commit to,
I think that we're involved in a little trickery back with the trickster.
Yes, I think you're right. I think that by engaging in this way, and not only in this way, but certainly in this way, by engaging like this, we turn our affection to the fool.
Yes.
Right? The highest yogi in the tarot pantheon of tarot is the fool. The fool trumps all of the other archetypes in the deck. So when we hang out this way, we turn our attention to the fool. And in doing so, you could say there's a palpable, textural, perhaps joyful, release from
all the other cards.
From imagination, which is all the other cards. Yeah.
And it's not going anywhere. It's just occurring right here, right now.
Yep. Yes. This, call it what we will, is occurring what we don't know what to say, so we say right here, right now.
Mm-hmm.
What it is that's occurring, we don't know. How it is that it is occurring, we don't know. Why, to whom, in what space and what time.
What purpose.
Or of course, purpose or utility. We don't know. We don't have a clue.
No.
And that, as we follow those crumbs, you know, one could say, leads to, reveals, liberation, realization. Why not?
Well, there's a world a commensurate world that accompanies that. Liberation from all the other actors in the card deck.
Well, liberation, you know, is a strange word because at one level of maturity, liberation suggests one thing, like perhaps the mitigation or absence of sorrow. At another level of maturity, liberation may reflect on something else, like the revelation of the pristine nature of ongoing ambiguity. It may mature even further to reveal the delicious emptiness of all experiencing. And who knows where it can go, since it is absolutely empty and void of nature, and yet persists. So it can reveal itself to itself at, let's just argue, levels of subtlety that are astoundingly present, clearly not articulatable. It's like, what happens if the Higgs boson, which is, let's call it the smallest known observable who knows what particle that contributes to the expressive nature of phenomena, the Higgs boson becomes self-conscious? Right? Because we think of self-conscious through the filter of the human persona, of the human experiential matrix. But what would it feel like were, what would you call it, the most pristine nature of this present emptiness become self-conscious? That would be a lot stranger and beyond the reach of human language to dare express. The question was?
How do you know it isn't?
Isn't what?
Self-conscious. Maybe it is.
Well, that's what we're playing with, is at what degree of subtlety or observation can we feel this as, call it conscious or self-luminous, or even transcendent of what we might mean as conscious. What's curious is that you, you as the persistent nature of this is without quality. Though you can find your toothbrush and your teeth, you know, at a minimum 2 times a day.
Uh-oh.
Uh-oh.
I missed one.
Yeah, you missed one. Your dog wouldn't notice. Now, it's really fun to feel this, since you have no choice anyway. And I don't know, what would you say? Just kind of lean into it, reach into it, feel it, and see that it has absolutely no quality while it is immersed in the appearance of meticulous specificity and meticulous quality.
I'm going to suggest a possibility.
Please do.
That currently there's the baseball playoffs occurring. It is possible to look at them as the only thing on television that is a revelation of the occurring moment. And if you can not fall into having it mean anything, it's amazing what happened. All kinds of shit and weird things go on. And we quickly want to make it into something. But on TV is the occurring moment, spontaneously generated, filmed, and projected. And there's no purpose to it, no accounting for it, except that immediately we are thrown to want to make something of it.
I love what you're suggesting. If I'm reading it the way I'm reading it, is that sports is actually a much better provocateur of the nourishment of reality than any other media can possibly be.
Anything else? That's why they're making billions of dollars. They're getting paid. People are lining up to give them money to keep doing it.
And it's great. We love to get shit-faced drunk and cold cock strangers in the stadium while we're enjoying our reality.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're talking.
Really. I finally found a reason to hang out in this fucking group. I'm gonna fucking what's it called? Tailgate. I'll suck down a 6-pack ribs and then go cold cock some motherfucker in the stadium. And for me, that's as close to Brahman as I ever need to get. Every other media, you know, that is shown maybe accept live footage from the deserts of Afghanistan or some other place that this heinous, vile, siphoning nation of ours is conducting violations of peoples on foreign soil. But I digress.
You do.
Dear friends at the NSA. You know, except for live war footage, sports is bliss. Is bliss. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You don't know what's happening from one freaking moment to the next.
Well, you don't ever. But
no.
Sports highlights.
Sports
highlights.
Yes. Off.
It highlights and magnifies the thrill of revelation, the thrill of enlightenment.
Hey, this is turning into a real guy's satsang. I like this.
Sweet. Well,
help with them bears.
There is an added element of exhilaration in just seeing it for what it is. The unpredictable, uncontrollable, ever occurring, alterable, who the hell knows why or what.
Yeah, competitive sports, like of course everything, is a window into profound revelation.
Yeah. And I suspect that's why it's so attractive.
That I concur. Yes. Absolutely.
I mean, it sucks a lot of males in and some females.
Well, the more fun adventure is what's present. Go into the thrill of what's present, mm-hmm. as your view into uncertainty. And to novelty.
Fred!
That is a big dog. Excuse me. Wow.
He says, French kiss me, Fred. See, French kiss me now.
His skull is made out of plate steel.
I don't mean to compare, but your dog is bigger than my dog.
You know, what's funny, as we are encouraged to look into this, the impulse for expressive reference or to tell a story, you could say, quiets down, soothes out. Attention loves attention. Awareness loves awareness. Non-referential being loves non-referential being. So in that respect, the yoga of radiant presence, regardless of the memes that may be used to kick it around, is interest and attention becomes remarkably interested in interest and attention without an object. And as we explore what it's like to be interested without an object, we stumble upon the revelation that this is also without a subject. Now, I don't see sports, not to belabor the point, as muting all of the voices in a stadium of 30,000 people. Maybe the Pope can do that.
Well, at least it depends on what happens.
Yeah, it's true.
There's muting that goes on, believe me.
Yes. Yes.
That's what looks like magic. Because it doesn't fucking care if there's 60,000 people or not that have a point of view.
Yeah, I mean,
it's doing whatever it does with indifference to what your plans are, what your desires are, how much you practice or didn't practice.
Yes, this whatever it is, you know, as a persistent strangeness, we could say occurs without any loyalty, with absolute indifference.
Really?
But that doesn't mitigate its intimacy. Mm-hmm. Now, that's a fun metaphor for realization. Mm-hmm. Whatever this is or isn't is perfectly indifferent, but not dismissive, not void of intimacy.
Whichever way it works out, that's available.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Pretty powerful.
I think it is. I think it's rather powerful. Even though... Like, yes, go ahead.
Kind of like loving somebody, but you really don't care if they fall off the bridge tomorrow, call you again, or are right there in front of you.
Well, take that same, let's call it frame of reference or attitude in a good way. Now apply it to yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you care if you call yourself, fall off a bridge, you know, show up a minute from now or tomorrow?
I look at that all the time and see the stuff that constitutes me. And know that in a blink of an eye, nobody will give a shit about any of it. It'll just disappear.
Well, yes, but there's no body. There's just present experience.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So there's no one here that ever really, you know, that we could hope would care or not care.
I was like... an invitation to the insane asylum.
There's no question that going down this path of, you know, playing around is for sure an invitation to the insane asylum.
Yeah.
Now we're not going there.
No, we've been there.
Been there, done that.
Yeah, we are all graduates on this call of that same insane asylum.
I never got the Thorazine, though. I'd like to try it.
All right.
It's funny on that note. This is a total digression, but I sent my mom like asked me, "Oh, who's that Peter Brown guy again?" And I, you know, probably after a beer and some marijuana, decided to send her a link to the Open Doorway and her friend that she works with. And I'm like, I went to Peter's website afterwards, which I think has been updated. I don't know since the last time I looked at it. And I'm like, what did I just send them? And I'm looking at it going, oh, my God, I just sent this whole thing. All he does is question the nature of reality, and I sent it to two psych nurses that work in, you know, all they do is deal with people who are questioning the nature of reality.
Yeah.
And they're locked up for it.
Yep.
Like, oh, that might have been a bad move.
Wow. Hey, anyone that's anyone in this marvelous dharmic circle of friends have, I would say, pretty intimate relationship with one or several psych wards.
I resemble that comment.
Indeed. Yeah. I mean, to be on a journey that unravels the sovereignty of human myth is bizarre. I mean, by now we're all adults, and so we've habituated to it to some degree. For us, it's kind of second nature. We couldn't think of life without it. But you know that you work with, talk to, rub shoulders with, shop with, you know, Muggle Jane and Muggle Joe that have never given the slightest concern or interest in what the fuck is going on here. I mean, this is truly a shamanic unraveling of the profundity of the myth of disparate, separate, subjective nature. I mean, you know, I know more people that wouldn't even understand what I just referred to than not. Imagine going on The View. You know, let's say right after Russell Brand or some other celebrity mouth and saying, well, you know, Whoopi, this is both void of subject and object. It doesn't have any real subjective nature. It's like void. What do you think about it?
Nothing.
Yeah, you know, I mean, poof.
Cut.
You know, the mainstream media, as whatever, playful as it can be sometimes, has no idea how to tackle the challenging, maddening sublimity of Rigpa.
They don't want to. You have to be interested.
Yes, you could say those producers and creative artists that manage the myth of celebrity through the media don't have any meaningful interest.
And if you've had a taste, you can't not be interested.
You are one doomed motherfucker.
It's the only game in town.
That's right. That's exactly right. If you've had a taste of your true elasticity, you're just gonna, you're, that's it. You're coming for that.
Can we wear Mickey Mouse ears next time?
Yes.
We'll have to come on with our Mickey Mouse ears on.
Well, Thursday, I can pick up some Mickey Mouse ears.
Okay.
We can, you know, that'd be good.
It could be a good joke for anybody that's not here tonight that shows up the next
time. Yeah, well, you know, Bullwinkle moose horns would be nice.
Yeah.
Right? Viking cap would be nice.
Hey, Halloween's coming up.
Halloween's coming up.
Last year I wore a sandwich board that said, you can't see me because I'm the invisible man. And then the other side said, see other side. I didn't have to spend a lot on it, I have to admit.
Sounds like you were a candy killer that night. The notion of freedom, as long as it's fathomable, is contrived. What we're aiming for, what this is aiming for, and tag, you're it, is a firsthand, whatever that suggests, appreciation of the bizarre, unspeakable, self-transcendent nature of being without quality. That's a freedom that's no longer conditional. That's no longer free from. That does not nor wish to stand apart. And that's what this is. It's your pleasure, let's say, your privilege to become blasphemously confident in your own nature. And we could say that would be the end of drafting.
Good.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of fun. We don't have to negotiate or navigate the endless drama field of human experience, of circumstance and event, of all of the disappointments and psychiatric smoothing that we would all benefit from. It's not necessary. Because what this already is completely independent, not codependent, transcendent of everything that appears in it. It's not necessary then to negotiate with or navigate the human drama field to sit squarely in revelation with, call it real or even feigned, confidence. Doesn't fucking matter. This way, fake it till you make it, is actually the unmitigated truth. Without a future, without a next move, there's this. Woo! It's interesting to hang out on the elevator together, appreciate the natural cessation of dwelling in human story, feeling yourself as yourself without a referee, without a judge. Kicking back and seeing what might come to mind. You know, we're not well trained to investigate present consciousness in, you know, an egalitarian manner. We're always being talked at. And I confess I do a good deal of the talking, but I hope that it's not received as being talked at. So, who has a thought, who has a, I don't know, conundrum, were there one?
I have a pleasure to report on. Burying some gladiola bulbs, I mean some daffodil bulbs in the ground. It's exquisitely intimate in relationship to earth with a promise that need not be fulfilled, but possibly could, resulting in beauty. I haven't done much of it. It was a thrill to do.
It's like, that's like such a plan for the future, for me.
Uh-huh.
I'm not that thrilled about what I'm doing currently, but I am excited about the possibility for something later. With things like that.
I think it's unavoidable.
It's a trickery.
Yeah.
I'm playing a little trickery back on the trickster.
Why not?
I mean, the squirrels could eat it. I don't know what'll happen to it.
You can screw with everybody and plant dead daffodils.
Well, you know, it's lovely to be together, to be humans together, to share in the joys and vicissitudes and uncertainties of what appears in imagination from moment to moment. And fuck, imagination is, you know, an open field. By even, you know, getting a glimpse of not knowing what this is. And it's funny, not knowing what this is sounds like, it can sound like some kind of activization. It's not. Right? Not knowing what this is not some other spiritual quota or vantage point.
Can't manufacture it.
Yes, right? It's completely unmanufacturable. I can't raise my hand in the satsang and go, ooh, 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 I don't know what this is. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You can do that, but...
Well, you can't adopt don't know.
Yes, that's right. I don't know is not adoptable or adaptable. Yes. Yeah, which is fun because I don't know. Can I say in a cherished way is real, first hand, not contrived or contrivable.
Revelation.
Yes. Isn't it? It's revelatory. It's reflective. It's immersive. It's radiant, to coin a phrase.
It's so I don't have a word for it. It's so new. It's so new that it's kind of like off the charts, but I mean,
it's sweet that way. It is absolutely off the charts if we're reaching for reference. And yet, it also intimately, to coin a phrase, who knows what that means, persists, is itself. We have this kind of profound, if not unshakable, confidence, but we don't know what in.
Yeah, that's really weird.
Hey, that's why I show up on a Tuesday.
Yeah. It's like, and it's like, it's like being on a ride at an amusement park that you never knew you were on. You just sort of find yourself on the.
Yeah.
I guess that's the quality of it for me. Is it just it takes me. There's no volition, and it's just a ride.
Yeah. It's lovely to characterize it that way.
You know, that's really the whole thing for me with I think with spiritual paths up to it, but so much volition and it doesn't, to me, it doesn't, the spiritual path doesn't start until that's just out the window. The volition is just out the window.
Yeah. Wow. What fun.
It wasn't this year, it was last year. I kind of cried all the way up to the Adyashanti retreat.
Yes.
The volition was gone. I knew I wasn't going to get anything. I didn't even know why I was going, but yet I was still going, and I knew that it was just bullshit to think I was going to get anything. I was just going, and I couldn't even explain why.
Yeah.
This year there was none of that. It was just...
I feel that same way about pizza.
Oh, I disagree.
Yeah, you're right. It only really fits when you're going to an Adyashanti retreat, but nah, pizza, nah.
Pizza, I know what I want.
When it comes to me and pizza... volition is out the window.
Well, if you stop believing that pizza is going to give you anything.
Oh, I stopped a long time ago.
It could be a serious loss.
Yeah, it could.
Well, you know, do you want just a slice of it or do you want the whole thing, you know?
Extra cheese and mushrooms, please.
Now we're talking. That's a retreat I want to go to. You guys meditate. I'll eat some pizza. I'll meet you at the dining hall.
Do you go see Adyashanti quite often, Nan?
I do. For some reason, I haven't given it up. I thought I was going to, but I haven't.
The last time she went, Adyashanti did her a favor and had Bell's palsy, and so he didn't show.
Serious?
Yeah, I got to meet Mukti and then some other woman that filled in for him.
Huh.
And I had this on again, off again, canceled it, reinstated it, and then had the chance to cancel it again, and I ended up going. I can't explain it.
That's great. I think it's great. He used to come to LA a lot back before, you know, he started getting, you know, 400 people every time. And there'd only be like 10 people in the room. That was great. And then he started getting a lot of the crowds. It was just, it became more gobbledygook to me. I like him, but I just couldn't handle, I guess I couldn't handle the scene.
Yeah.
Wow. It's 9 o'clock or just prior. I looked at my clock and I was like, what?
Have we been 2 minutes left.
Hanging out for an hour and a half?
I'm sure glad we mentioned pizza at the end. That was important.
Yeah. I always, you know, I'm not as unpopular as you think. I actually am endorsed by Papa John's.
Wow.
You mentioned Papa John's. Their pizza sucks.
Oh, I thought Papa it was Papa G. I thought it was Papa G. Oh, jeez, I'm in the wrong place.
You always have to start with Putin.
If you can get down to Spring Garden Street near the current food market, Stephen Starr has a pizza joint. And I have to admit, it was really good.
Road trip.
On Spring Garden Street.
Well, I thank all of you for deciding that it would be valuable to participate in this little experiment this evening and taking an hour and a half out of your thrilling and valuable lives.
Thanks, Jeff.
Thank you.
We'll see you all again real
soon. Well, thanks for the opportunity to fuck around with your mystery.
Have a good retreat.
Yeah, we'll have a, Peter's arriving tomorrow, and we'll have a little dinner on Friday and a retreat over the weekend.
Sounds good.
Rock and roll.
See you there. Bye-bye. Bye, guys.
Bye, guys. Bye-bye.